You're in this 16 by 16 ring, right? If you mess up, you understand it's okay. It's okay. You know how to deal with that. You're not going to fly off the handles. I was like, here in boxing, it's not just about punching somebody. I was like, what the main thing is understanding how to control your emotions. Control your emotions through the stress. Okay. And then when we're out there in the real world, not under distress, gets a little easier to control your emotions. So I just tell them out there is just a little bigger ring. It's a little bigger ring with a couple more punches coming at you.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytané and Tsingtian First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. This week, we're revisiting mental health, but this time from a community perspective. Community champions play an underrated role in supporting those with mental health issues, no more so than today's guest, a successful seven-time national champion competitive boxer, until he met his ultimate challenge, his own mental health. Eventually proving victorious, he now runs a local boxing club in Prince George, but still dedicates a significant amount of his personal time helping youth with their own mental health challenges. And to tell us about his journey and his important work today is today's guest, Kenny Lally. Welcome, Kenny. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So we always start off our podcasts asking our guests to introduce themselves a little and tell us a little bit about themselves. So I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about yourself, Kenny. What's your background? Where did you grow up?
So yes, my name is Kenny Lally. I am from Prince George, BC, Canada. I am the youngest of three. I'm the first generation Canadian. Both my parents immigrated from India to Canada. They moved around when they first got here in BC, but then finally settled in Prince George. I come from a very traditional East Indian family. I have a great family. They're very supportive in everything that I do. A lot of people in my culture understand that sometimes our path is laid out for us, where you go to school, you get an education, you get a good job, you get married, have kids, and get your life on with. I'm sure a lot of families are like that. Mine was no different, but I took a little bit of a different route with boxing, but I had support from my parents 100%. Obviously, my parents didn't like too much watching their son get punched in the face, but regardless, even through all my tough times, they supported my journey.
Sure. Okay, so let's turn to your boxing career. How did that start, and how successful did you eventually become?
I started boxing when I was 13. I was over at one of my friend Daniel Cannon's house, and he was getting ready for boxing, and he put his hand wraps on. And I thought that was really, really cool, the way that it looked, and I really wanted a pair of those. And that night, I just happened to watch the movie Ali, starring Will Smith. I didn't know much about Ali. I always knew people talked that he was a great champion and all this. And then when I watched that movie, like the way they depicted his story was very inspiring. And so I told my mom, I was like, Mom, I really want to go to boxing. My mom was hesitant at first, obviously, but yeah, then they took me to the club, and very, very quickly I caught on. Within 2 months, I got my first fight. I lost my first fight. It was a very, very close fight. And I'm the youngest of all my cousins. So all my cousins in Surrey, they came to watch and they razzed me a bit after I lost. And I took it a little hard. So I quit. I quit after my first loss. And then one of my good friends, Nate Michaud, he said he wanted to start boxing and he didn't want to go alone. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll go with you. And and the rest is pretty much history there. That's when I started just taking boxing very seriously, and I kind of just took off from there.
Mm-hmm. And so how successful did you ultimately become? Because you actually rose to a pretty high level, didn't you?
Yeah, I did fairly well. So in boxing, I am an 11-time BC provincial champion. I'm a 6-time Golden Gloves champion. I'm a 7-time national Canadian champion. I earned a bronze medal at the Pan American Games, a silver medal at the Continental Championships. To date, I am still the most decorated boxer ever to come out of BC. And at my highest, I was ranked 19th in the world, which is pretty cool.
Wow, that is pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. And so you went to these stratospheric heights, such a high level of competitive boxing. But then something happened, didn't it? How and what went wrong at this point and in your personal story?
So my dream ever since I started boxing was the Olympic Games. So my sport is amateur boxing. What most people see on TV is professional boxing. There was a big difference, especially in the way that we fight. Professional boxing, those prize fighters, that's when you're making the big money, right? For amateur boxing, it wasn't about money for me. It was about repping that maple leaf, right? I wanted to get to the Olympics, to be an Olympian, right? You were in that small percentage of those people that could make it there. So that was my goal. In the 2016 Olympic qualifier, I moved to Montreal for 3 months prior to this to train with the national team, and then we went to Argentina for the qualifier. There's 26 guys in my weight class, and right off the bat, I drew the number one seed at Dominican Republic. His name is Hector Garcia. Hector and I, we met before earlier that year, and he beat me fair and square. He's a big dude, and I was much smaller than him. When we fought, I'm fairly fast in the ring, and I would be hitting this guy, and he just wouldn't go anywhere. He's just standing there exactly where he is, and he would be hitting me, I'd be blocking, and oh boy, you could feel it, right? But this time it was different. I was bigger, I was faster, I was stronger, I was more motivated, and for sure he underestimated me. And yeah, what do you know? In my first fight, I took out the number one seed. It was really cool. And I was really pumped, right? And I'm going into my qualifying round against Venezuela, and it was a hard fight. But I don't want, like, honestly, like, still a little bit of sourness here. I fought my heart out. I suffered a cut midway through a headbutt. When they announced the decision, I lost on a split, and I recently just started talking about this in my boxing club. I let people know my story, but not this part. This part I was very hard because this was the beginning of the end, the beginning of the destruction for me. And that moment that they raised his hand, my life began to unravel big time. I spent a better part of my life trying to reach that moment, right? And so easily those judges could just rip it away. The pain I felt in that ring was very immense. And when I got home, it got a lot worse. I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror. I was a failure. I was not good enough to make the Olympics. And then the resentment that I held towards those judges dragged me deeper and deeper into my darkness, into my depression. And I didn't know what depression was, right? And coming back home, we had a plan with my family. My dad has he started a trucking company when he was young, and it's turned into this very successful company. And me having no background in schooling, right? My parents are like, okay, you come into the trucking, you can dispatch and all that. So when I got home, it was like, okay, boxing's done, time to switch, like, right into real life. And I tried, right? Like, okay, but again, I didn't know what I was actually dealing with, right? The immense pain of my dream being shattered, and now having to start a new life and just forget about it. I couldn't, right? It kept eating away at me, and eating away at me, it drove me to a place where I didn't want to go, and I reverted to drugs and alcohol. And for 2 years, it was real bad. It was real bad. I was lighter than my fight weight. It's easier to comprehend and now understanding what I was going through, but back then, like, just darkness everywhere. And if I would look for the negativity in everything, if I didn't find it, I'd look even harder, right? It was just, and then, like, I'm burning bridges with everyone, even with my family, right? Like, I felt alone. I didn't want to be here anymore either, and that's where, like, I made some stupid decisions, and thank God I didn't do what I did. But from there, that's where I hit bottom. Every wall that I created in my head, because I already failed at boxing, and every time I knew I was becoming more and more of an addict, right? So I kept putting on more masks, and finally that day, boom, every wall cracked, and that voice came through that I don't want to die. Then so I told my wife, right, I'm ready to go get help. 2 years prior to that, I went out to an establishment 45 minutes west of Prince George. It's called Baldy Hughes Therapeutic Community. It's this old army base that helped addicts. It's self-sufficient. It was really cool. When I went out there, they asked me to come out there and run a boxing program for a day for the clients. And so now I am a client going out there. So for me, my biggest thing was my ego. And so I went into Baldy Hughes, and it was actually really cool. There's about 45 guys there, and I've never been to an AA meeting. I've never been to a counselor, anything like that. AA for sure helped me going through there. And the biggest thing was when I was started hearing other stories that, holy man, I am not alone. That was the biggest thing. I would, like, in my isolation and my darkness, right? Like, God, I'm this alone person. Nobody else do. Everybody else got their stuff figured out except me, right? Oh no, there's many of us out there that struggle. And then my 1 year anniversary was coming up, and I was having a very hard time. The staff there was very, very accommodating. They were gonna let us have a candlelit dinner, bring my wife in. But for me, right, as a man, I was like, what kind? I promised this woman that I will be with her for the rest of her, take care of her, right? Give her a good life. And I got to bring her to a recovery center on our 1 year anniversary. I struggled with that immensely. And so I made the decision. I called my parents. I called my parents, and I told them, I was like, okay, come get me. And this was probably one of the hardest parts. My mom and dad are very loving, for sure. My dad is more right. The dad should be, and my mom is more loving. When I would go on trips, as a father now, right? I would go on trips, and my mom, she would cry as I'm leaving international, and my dad was always just chill, right? And it made me chill too. Sometimes he'd be reading the paper while I was waiting, and I'm just like, "Oh, dad's just relaxed about this." Little did I know, inside he's so nervous, right, that his son's leaving. So when I was leaving to Baldy Hughes, same thing he did. He didn't know how to say bye to me, right? And so I said bye to him while he was on the phone with somebody. That was a hard part for me, very, very hard part. But when I called my mom, my dad grabbed the phone and said, "We're coming," right? Like, right away, my dad grabbed the phone. And my mom grabbed the phone back and said, "No, Ashley's coming to my life." And but that was very big moment for me. But then my dad wouldn't do something like that, right? Grab the phone. But sorry, I'm trying to keep my stuff together here.
No, that's okay. That's okay, Kenny. You know, I appreciate this is hard. It's reliving this period, and I just want to say thank you for being willing to talk us through it and relive that. But bit by bit at Baldy Hughes, I mean, that was the place you needed to be, clearly, and you got through it, right? Through the programs, through the support that you found with the others there, through your family, your supportive family, you did turn things around. And
Yes.
you came out the other side, and that's amazing, right? And the perhaps more amazing now is that you're actually back into the sort of boxing arena, into this world of
Yeah.
boxing, with the boxing club. So I wonder whether you could tell us a little bit now about that, about the inner city boxing club, your club. How did you get involved in that, and what sort of programs do you run?
We're on our third year now, and there's a MMA club in town called Kaiten MMA, and the owner, Carmenas, great friend of ours, he asked Jag to come down to run some boxing classes. And so Jag started coming down once a week, and he called me one day, and he said, he asked me if I could come help, because there's about 30, 35 people. And I told him no at first, because there's still a little PTSD for me. I would have to use to train by the end, right? There's a lot of things, like even like cutting the lawn, right? Or folding my clothes. There's certain, like, just certain things, and the triggers are still there. But then it was my wife. My wife told me, she's like, "School, it's just once a week. It'll be good for you. Just go." And so I was like, okay. So I started going, and slowly started getting into training with these guys. These are all MMA guys, not boxers. But then we started teaching them our style about bringing our arms in and like the actual technique. And there's this young kid named Josh. He was 16 at the time. And he started for me. He was like this at first. In about a month with us, he started a little bit better. And then he started sparring and he's like taking some guys out. We're like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool, right? Like he's learning. We're teaching and he's learning. And in Prince George, there's an establishment called the Roller Dome, and it's been here for years. And at the upstairs of the Roller Dome, that was where inner city boxing first started. And then one of our friends, the same friend that brought me back to boxing, Nate, he threw the idea up that wouldn't it be crazy if we went back to the Roller Dome? I was like, yeah, wouldn't that be crazy? And then one day I just looked at my phone, I just checked the Roller Dome, and I saw that the owner was Jordan Yu. And I know of Jordan Yu. Him and his brother were very high level basketball players in Prince George. And so I got his number and I reached out to him. I asked if the space was open, and he said it was. And 3 years later, we're just we got our feet on the floor, we're running, and things are going pretty good, and running a bunch of different programs.
Excellent. So, bouncing back from depression and addiction, and then opening a successful boxing club, that's a great story, but that's not the end of your story, is it? And so I want to move on and talk about some of your special programs. How did you start getting involved in helping local youth with their mental health through boxing?
Honestly, it just started happening. When Jag and I started the boxing club, our main thing, we wanted a sports team, right? We wanted a sports team, having a fight team. That was been our dream. And then it started developing into a lot more than that. The way I got healthy, right, was through boxing. And I try to relate the struggle that we have in boxing into real life is very similar, right? And in the way that we teach that I do high interval training, that at any moment you can quit. Any moment, nobody's stopping you, right? It's you yourself that must go willingly into the suffering again and again and again, with no prize or anything that comes with it, except in here, understanding, right? Okay, if pain will come and pain will go away, right? So understanding how to deal with it. And then there's a woman, Shannon Keeping, was in our women's program, and she works with Northern Health with the psychiatric ward on with the youth. And I don't want to go too far into it, but in my heydays, I was very close to being on that floor. And she asked if I would work with if I could do some stuff with these kids, and I told her, I was like, I wouldn't know what to do. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a counselor, I'm an athlete that went through a bunch of stuff and turned into a coach. But I said, sure, I'll give it a try. And I didn't know how to approach it at first. I'm not sure what these kids are going through and all that. But we're on our year three now, and it's developing pretty cool. So what I do with these kids when they come up, usually about three to five of them, I don't ask their stories. I tell them mine. First off, I just tell them I'm not so different from you guys. I tell them who I am, what I've done, and very briefly. And then I just tell them, I was like, the elephant in the room right now, your reality is dark for sure, but I'm going to show you that a person you've never met before in a sport you've never done before can show you some light. What I mean by that is they will smile. I was like, I guarantee you'll smile today. So I take them in the ring, I get them gloves on, and they start doing some hand pads with me. And just very simple, and it's very rhythmic in just like making some music, going back and forth. And I teach them. Sometimes I make it a little harder so they do mess up, and then I explain it to them that here in this 16 by 16 ring, right? If you mess up, you understand it's okay. It's okay. You know how to deal with that. You're not going to fly off the handles. I was like, here in boxing, it's not just about punching somebody. I was like, what the main thing is understanding how to control your emotions. Control your emotions through the stress. Okay. And then when we're out there in the real life, in the real world, not under distress. It's a little easier to control your emotions. So I just tell them out there is just a little bigger ring. It's a little bigger ring with a couple more punches coming at you. Yeah, and no, yeah, usually they turn the classes turn out really good. Kids are happy, and yeah, it's super rewarding for sure.
Good. And so how do they respond to this? Presumably there's a range of responses, but how do the kids respond to your teaching them boxing and you giving them some of these some tips to cope with some of the stresses they're feeling in their lives?
For the majority of the part, honestly, they're fairly quiet. They just listen. But I've had it was probably 3 to 4 kids have opened up there in front of everybody about their stories and like full on. It's really cool. That's why I tell my story first. Like let them know I'm different. And that's the main thing I tell these guys, so that in boxing I was a very strong person, but in this real world I was weak, and that's okay. It's okay to be weak. So I had to go away and I had to become stronger. I have to be different than most people here. I am an addict, and that's okay. It doesn't make me any different. I just need to get some thicker armor.
And so, how many kids have you helped now through this boxing program, do you think?
It's not just in that Northern Health program. So we've run a lot of inner city kids, and Jag and I. We came from very, very good families, hardworking families that they had the money to support our dreams. Jag and I saw hundreds of kids that had talent like us and even better that could not afford it. So our main thing here, like we try to make our memberships as cheap as possible, but people that are coming onto our fight team, Jag and I will sponsor their memberships. When they have one job, is to fight and to train. I've seen so many people worry about money, right? And just like I want kind of want to take that factor out. And our club is doing very well, like our women's program and stuff. So a lot of this is funding the team program, which is really, really cool. We've helped. I couldn't put a number on. I don't know, I'm not sure. I hope I helped them. I don't know for sure if I helped them, but they leave the gym smiling. So I hope I did.
Well, it sounds like you do help them, and it's if they're coming back to you, then I think they're appreciating that, and that's great. You mentioned that you do find this rewarding, this work rewarding, and I can see that, I can hear that in your voice. I'm no doubt there are going to be some kids are going to be more challenging. I would have thought maybe don't respond as positively, but what keeps you motivated to do this? What and keep offering this program? What's your personal philosophy on this?
It's a really good question. I'll be 37 this month, and this is what I wanted to do with my life ever since I was young, right? Like I wanted to own my own boxing club. I wanted to have a sports team, and I wanted to help people, right? And I saw this thing that I was really tired. I was people doom scroll. I was just doom scrolling. I saw this thing and it felt like it was talking right to me. It was just like, aren't you happy that you were tired doing something you love than rather doing something that you hate? And I was like, yeah, cool. Yep. And I felt good. And I cycled out of my head daily, especially my days are long. I'm tired. I'm on my feet dealing with a lot of stuff. But you know what? At the end of the day is I am very happy where I am. And the self-destruction of myself was very, very important to my story. And that's why I'm ready to share it as well. Like, struggle is a real thing. Everybody struggles. I struggle daily, not in that aspect, right? But struggles come in many different varieties. And we just got to know how to handle them and be strong enough to get through them.
Well, yeah, thank you. And thank you for sharing that the struggle continues. But it sounds like one of the ways that you help yourself through this is by offering this program, by running this club, by helping others who were probably in a similar situation to you a few years ago. And that's wonderful. That's amazing that you're giving back in that way. And that's actually a great place to round off today's interview. So thank you, Kenny, for
Well,
joining
thank you
us,
guys for having me.
for sharing your story, for telling us about this wonderful program that you have for local youth. Such valuable work. It really is. You've been listening to Kenny Lally, co-owner and a head coach at the Inner City Boxing Club in Prince George. To find out more about today's guest, check out our show notes and on our website. But until next time, it's goodbye from us here at QualityCast North, our guest and your host. I'm Cher Chewy.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycons@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.